Got a hold of the guest I was supposed to have about a half hour ago. She'll join us following news here at top of the hour. We're about two away from that. This is WGN. All right, Mike McConnell back at it, 2:08. Gary Myers in 1 hour. What, no Mexican hat dance music? A little mariachi? Yesterday was Cinco de Mayo, as we know. And as for the origins of Cinco de Mayo, and I've heard in the past, it had nothing to do with Mexican independence. It has to do with one particular Mexican victory over a well-fortified French army, and it's not something that's celebrated in Mexico either. So how did it come to be? What's new in the world of Spanish-speaking Americans? To that end, I go to a French-speaking one. Julie Barlow actually is French-Canadian, and she and her husband have a book that will come out on the 7th of May, I think it is, 7th of May. The story is Spanish, but on the Cinco de Mayo issue, I want to touch on that first. Julie Barlow, good to have you on the program. How are you?
Hi. It's good to be on. It's good to be on depending on how that Cinco de Mayo sat with you. I don't know.
Oh, I'm fine with Cinco de Mayo. I have no problem.
No. The piece, you know, some people love it, some people really don't like it, so I'm curious to see what you think.
That's fine by me. I wonder to what degree it's really gaining popularity thanks to Corona beer and Dos Equis as opposed to something cultural. But
you can't deny it. I mean, there's no doubt about it. But, you know, that doesn't change actually what we wrote about Cinco de Mayo. You know, the idea taken from the research from our book, which is this big history of the Spanish language, the story of Spanish. A lot of the book is about the United States. Maybe a third of the book is about what Spanish is doing in the United States. And the Cinco de Mayo story was interesting because it sort of shows what's happening with this rising community that's becoming kind of influential, you know, in the United States, but also in the whole Spanish-speaking world. And that's the sort of the end of the story of this Cinco de Mayo.
Yeah, you kind of make the point that Cinco de Mayo, maybe it didn't start out as this, but it's become a holiday that brings people of different Hispanic backgrounds together for an occasion.
Exactly. I mean, it started out as this obscure battle in Puebla, Mexico, and that's the only place that it's really celebrated in Mexico now, is in this little city about an hour outside of Mexico City. And, you know, the battle was these Pueblans that beat the French army. So it's really symbolic for the people of Puebla. But the fact of the matter was that a year later, the French went back and beat the Mexicans. And so, you know, there was no consequence to that battle. It didn't change history.
Right.
But it remained that, and it was very quickly picked up by the Mexican immigrants living in California. Now, I say Mexican immigrants, but of course, some of them were Latinos that had been living in Mexico before it became California, right?
Yes.
So the community had been there for a long time for different reasons. Like, historians really disagree about why it started, in the 1860s being celebrated there. And then about a century later, the quickly growing Latino community, which is all sorts of nationalities, not just Mexican, they begin looking for a festival or something that's really like the pan-Latino celebration of the United States. And they settle on Cinco de Mayo because it's not, most people don't know about it, so it's not really identified with Mexicans or any community in particular. And, you know, it wasn't a religious ceremony. It just seemed to fit the bill.
It was a
so
date.
That's what happened. Pardon me?
It was a date. So in the 1970s.
Yeah, it was a date and a party. And then, of course, it grew in popularity partly because of the community itself has grown so quickly and become so influential. Now, of course, it's ironic that, you know, nobody knows exactly how many of the 52 million Hispanics who identify themselves as Hispanics in the United States actually speak Spanish. But, you know as well as I do, you don't need to speak Spanish to enjoy Cinco de Mayo. You know,
right. And I would bet there are many more non-Hispanics who celebrated Cinco de Mayo yesterday than there were Hispanics. At least in this country, people look for a reason to drink, and that happens to be one of them.
Exactly, and it's a great reason to drink. But it was funny. I mean, part of the research we did for this book was in Phoenix, Arizona. And, you know, we lived there during Cinco de Mayo, and I was really expecting it to be, you know, a Mexican thing, so I was asking my Mexican friends about it. And a lot of the Mexicans they don't really celebrate it, the Mexicans from Mexico. It's really the immigrants, the families who've been there for a long time, and it's students and everybody. I mean, we went to a Cinco de Mayo party. It wasn't exactly Mexican. In fact, there was a big inflated bottle of vodka at the entrance.
Yeah.
Tequila, you know. So it's really gone beyond, like, you know, you know, Mexico and even Latino in some ways.
Well, it's predominantly an American thing, is your point, right?
I think that's a sign of how, you know, how integrated the Latino and Hispanic population is in the United States. I mean, it's between 14 and 16% of the population. It's huge.
So among those who are celebrating Cinco de Mayo, I mean, I guess overwhelmingly just based on the numbers, they would be Mexican, but Salvadorans, I mean, in Miami, were Cubans celebrating Cinco de Mayo?
I assume so. I mean, I don't know. Everybody, I think, celebrates it pretty equally. I have Salvadoran friends who used to celebrate it. They kind of stopped as it's become more like a mainstream American. Like, kind of paradoxically, some of the Latinos have sort of eased off of it because it's become more like a general American celebration than anything specifically for Latin Americans of any stripe.
Yeah, besides they drink Budweiser.
I have no idea what they drink. Vodka, but, apparently, but I don't know. And, I'm Canadian. I'm up here in Canada. I'm not French-Canadian, actually. My husband is, my co-author is French-Canadian. But, nobody celebrates Cinco de Mayo. And the people who know it, they assume it's something from Mexico. But I just got a letter from a lady who'd read the piece, and she was an American traveling in Mexico this weekend, and she said, I was expecting Cinco de Mayo celebrations everywhere, and of course, unless she was in the relatively small city of Puebla, there's no sign of it. It's not a national holiday in Mexico.
Well, it's like for years.
But it may become, and this is one of the points we're sort of becoming, you know, as the Mexican and Latin American community of the United States grows and becomes more and more influential, my guess is that they're going to export Cinco de Mayo to other Spanish-speaking countries. I mean, in 10 years, I wouldn't be surprised if you're seeing a re-export of Cinco de Mayo in Mexico, because the Hispanic community in the United States is bigger than Spain. It's 52
wow.
million Hispanic.
Yeah.
It's bigger than Spain, and it's growing and could rival, you know, the biggest Spanish-speaking country in the world at the moment, which is Mexico.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, in Ireland, St. Patrick's Day was never as big as it was here until they recognized the possibility for tourism. So
yeah.
Now they celebrate it to a far greater degree, but it was very much an American, Irish-American feast that became an all-American thing long before the Irish really cashed in on it.
Exactly. Like, it's exactly the same thing that's happening.
The other aspect of your piece I just wanted to touch on was the fact that in this country, there is a U.S. version of Spanish that has developed over time and continues to develop, and it's different from Spanish that's spoken in other Latino countries and
yeah.
in Spain, correct?
Well, what you have in the United States are, you know, a lot of immigrants from different countries, a majority Mexicans, but you have, you know, Latinos that come from different countries. And so it's created a situation where there's you know, no real, like, better accent or not better accent, but a lot of floating between different kinds of Spanish, and particularly, you know, Spanglish, which is floating into the American Spanish spoken here. So it's curious because as the population gets more prosperous and becomes more like the buying power of Mexicans, of Hispanics becomes more important, the United States is exporting more Spanish products. So the question of creating a special kind of Spanish is not really like the spoken language, because people are going to speak whatever they speak. It's not
right.
going to be a language that's going to be, you know, everybody's going to have to learn American Spanish. But it's a language that is going to be used by people who translate and write manuals for things and, you know, government documents and things. And the problem, again, is that, you know, translators and journalists and anybody working in the written word in Spanish in the United States, they don't know what to use. They don't know what's right and what's not right. Do they use Mexican Spanish? Do they use Spanish Spanish? Do you know what exactly is the right language? So there's this little body, the American Language Academy of Spanish in New York City, that is trying to hammer out a standard that will be really, truly American Spanish. And that's the language that, you know, people will have to use in print. And that is becoming influential in Spain right now. And that's the great kind of surprise that we came across when we were writing this book. The Spanish, Royal Spanish Academy in Madrid is including American Spanish words in its next dictionary.
Well, in this country, most people would be under the impression that eventually Spanish-speaking people who come to this country will learn English just as Italians did and the French did and the Chinese and everybody else does. You make it sound as though there's going to be a form of American Spanish that's going to be around for good.
I'm guessing it's going to be around for a while. I mean, you know, of course, nobody knows exactly what's happening with immigration. You know, Latin American immigration has slowed in the last couple of years. But this population, the Spanish-speaking population, has grown faster in the United States over the course of the 20th century than in any other Spanish-speaking country in the world. And that has a certain kind of, you know, yes, people are going to be speaking within two or three generations, they'll be speaking English. But they're sticking to Spanish, reintroducing Spanish in the third generation to, you know, grandchildren who didn't learn Spanish. And there's a certain, like, weight that the community, a kind of inertia in the community that I don't think is going to go away tomorrow. I think it's going to be decades and decades.
Right.
If Spanish disappears, it's going to be, it's a long way off. And in the meantime, you have these growing, prosperous Hispanics producing Hispanic language products, you know, TV shows and radio shows and newspapers that are growing in the United States. And you have other countries trying to do business with the United States in Spanish. So, you know, that's what's in place right now. So it's kind of curious. It's kind of paradoxical.
Yeah.
But, you know, Spanish is not exactly a foreign language in the United States.
It's, no, not at all.
It was spoken in the United States before the United States was the United States. So
correct, at least portions
there.
Of it. I don't have much time. I'm curious, your husband is French-Canadian. When he travels in France, do they look down their nose at him like some sort of North American hillbilly the way the British do to us?
A little bit, yeah. And to me, too. I mean, I speak with a Quebec accent. Yeah, a little bit. But Quebec's kind of in style right now in France, so less and less.
You're in vogue.
Yeah, right, well, it's getting a little easier.
You can get the book at Amazon, The Story of Spanish. I appreciate your time.
Thank you
Julie
so much.
Barlow, and take care.
Thanks.
Adios.
Well.